So the standard, the MUMPS standard, encompasses a great deal more than I think anyone can reasonably expect the current effort to standardize BASIC to come up with. I think standard BASIC is going to be a very minimal subset of the numerous extended BASICs. And as a result, I think that programming in MUMPS is a much more fruitful exercise in that you can hope that there's a much larger market for your product. You're not just programming for people who have X-flavored BASIC. Question?
On the TDP 11 MUMPS and on the micro-based MUMPS that people are working on, will that be public domain or will it be a $1,000 compiler type deal or what?
The PDP 11 effort is being done at Mass General under the sponsorship of Digital Equipment Corporation. The availability of it, I am not sure whether it will be public domain or not. I can't really answer that. But I think that in a few months there will be an LSI 11 MUMPS. As to its availability, I don't really know. I think that DEC may want to market that. Okay, the rest of the talk is divided into four parts. I'd first like to go over briefly what the MUMPS operating system looks like in a very general way. And then I'd like to cover the features of the MUMPS language to show you that, indeed, it does have all of those features of BASIC that make, of extended BASICs that make BASIC nice. And then finally, I'd like to discuss our implementation technique at UCSF, which is basically a machine-independent method of implementing a large part of a MUMPS system. The MUMPS operating system traditionally looks something like this. Primary memory is divided up, as I mentioned earlier, into a number of traditionally fixed size user partitions. The size is somewhere between 1 and 3K bytes. And the operating system takes up some portion of primary memory, and it's a resident operating system traditionally. The MUMPS system, you only get to program in MUMPS, although people have also implemented MUMPS under a more general operating system. But this is the traditional view. The operating system consists of a time-sharing executive, which manages the context switching between users, the source language interpreter for the MUMPS language, the I/O device monitors, the global disk buffer pools. I'll be talking about globals in just a moment. Then each user partition consists of a program state vector, which has all the information needed to context switch, an execution stack for intermediate results and expression evaluation, a line buffer and a string accumulator, the line buffer being for the user terminal for input and output. The string accumulator is not always present, but it's used for temporary string results. The rest of the user partition is shared. The routine code, the MUMPS code, grows down, and the symbol table grows up toward it. The portion up here of the user partition is invisible to the programmer, and it's under the system control, and he can't do anything about it. The remainder of the user partition is specifically under the user's control. And as in BASIC, variables are created and deleted dynamically. And in MUMPS, the programmer has the responsibility for doing that. So that is briefly an overview of what a MUMPS operating system might look like. And as I mentioned, you can do this in about 32. If you want 20 users, you can do this in about 32K words, or 32K 16 or 18 bit words, or larger, if you want. So it is of a size that is fairly well suited to microprocessors these days. To 64K bytes. I'm talking about a 20-user system. If you want a 2-user system, you could presumably do it in about 16K words.
1 user would be 16K words.
Well, this implementation, the incremental cost of a user is 1K. If you wanted to write an explicit single-user system, you could obviously reduce the operating system size by some amount, because you wouldn't need to do context switching, et cetera, et cetera. So that you could probably get a single user MUMP system in 8K, perhaps. 8K words, sorry. 16K bytes. The operating system chops up primary memory that way. The other facilities that a MUMPS environment gives you are that it takes care of essentially all of your program management for you. You have a number of editing commands, typically. You have debugging commands and filing commands to manage your programs for you, so that that is taken care of by the operating system. And this is one of the things that I think is important to keep in mind throughout the talk, is that the operating system, the MUMPS operating system, handles a lot of the details of program management and file management that traditionally are left to the programmer in other systems. More recently, people have experimented with the scheme I just showed you, having variable sized user partitions, sharing routine codes amongst several users, or sharing of local symbol table space, specifically a string tank where all of the users' string values are held without being able to interact with each other. So that's briefly the operating system. The language, one of the most important and crucial features to the MUMPS language is its file handling facility. And this is called globals. It provides a tree-structured file system, a hierarchical database system, which resides on some sort of external media, typically disk. A MUMPS global has a root node, and then may have any number of descendant levels and any number of nodes on each of those levels. Any node can have a value, or it may just be a temporary node to a final destination node. So here we see a global called file, and what I'm showing here is an example of how you would reference a particular node in this global. And in particular, I'm referencing file of the fourth level, actually the fifth level if you include the name as a root node. I want to get to this node, and I want to get this value, which is someone's name. This could be a billing file or a medical record file, whatever the particular application is somewhat irrelevant. To reference that node in the database, this is the MUMPS code that would do that. I don't know if everyone can see that. It's just a list of subscripts. Each subscript is a lower level in the database, and the system will then map that onto the disk into the necessary disk accesses. Typically, each level you go down will be a new disk block. So that here the top level node is typically held in core, In some time-critical files, you might even have the first level node in core as well. Then for each level you go down, you do a disk access, you get to this block, and this block has then this value. It may have other values as well, since values at the same level will be packed into a block as efficiently as possible. So to get this value into local storage, this is the reference. Now I've also shown here how you would create a new node. Let's say that in the local variable sex, we had placed this person's sex, male or female, and we wanted to create the node 8422 to be his sex. That was our convention. Well, ordinarily, you might think you would have to go through this same process that you would get down, the system would first see if this node existed. And it would do that by doing the four disk accesses down to this node. It would then search that block at the lowest node and would not find the value. It would put a new node in there with the value that you requested. But there is in the language a mechanism for avoiding these redundant disk accesses. Since I had just referenced this level, if I want to reference another node on the same level, I need only put the subscript of the lowest level in, and the system will implicitly assume that I mean the same higher level subscripts, and it will not do those disk accesses. In fact, it will only have to search this block at the lowest level. There may be several blocks, so it may have to search a few blocks, but it will not have to go back and do redundant disk accessing. So, as you can see, this is the MUMPS file handling system. It allows you to very transparently manage your database from within a program in much the same way as you would a tree-structured array. And note that these node values can be variable length strings. This is another feature throughout the MUMPS system and the MUMPS language, is that it handles variable length strings routinely and transparently, and there is no involvement in the programmer in worrying about how long the string is and whether it will overflow or whatever. Also note that the system, in the case of creating a new node at this level, these higher level nodes already existed. If the higher level nodes did not exist when we created a new, say, fourth level node, let's say we wanted to create a file of 9321, the higher level nodes would not exist in that case. The system would automatically create them and make an access path from the root to the node that was created. Again, the programmer doesn't have to worry about this. The only thing the programmer has to worry about is the layout of this file. And that is something of a critical matter in real applications to ensure that the efficiency of disk accessing is maintained. You do not want to obviously create a file that is essentially a linear file across here. You want to create it so that it fans out, much like a tree would. The current standard only allows numeric valued keys. There is a proposed extension to the standard that I hope will be voted on and accepted fairly soon that will allow string keys as well. Variable length string keys up to some maximum. Yes? Oh yes, these can be any general expressions. So, no, they eventually get converted to a specific integer value, and it's the integer value that's actually stored on the disk block. So this has never, to my knowledge, has not yet been implemented on a floppy disk. it's conceivable that it could be, and I think it will be very soon. So I think globals are one of the strongest features for advocating MUMPs over a language like BASIC. First of all, BASIC, the standard BASIC, will not have, I don't expect, have much in the way of a file management facility, because it's just something that is very hard to standardize. And there's a lot of vendor interaction there that I think will not lead to agreement. So that MUMPS, I think, has a real advantage in its file handling facility. And secondly, note that a lot of people criticize that MUMPS files are not well suited to doing index sequential accessing. But with this so-called naked reference, where you don't have to do the redundant searches of the higher level nodes, you in effect are doing an index sequential lookup. So MUMPS has this built-in file system which relieves the user of most of the headaches that you traditionally have in file management. I'd like to go on to a few other features of the language. And I'll just hit the high points. The commands are very similar to BASIC. In fact, if you saw a typical MUMPS routine, it would look almost like a BASIC routine. It has if-else, it has a for, it has a do, it has a go-to, it has a read and a write. It has some other resource management commands. It has open and close for device interlocking. It has a lock facility for doing an abstract resource interlocking, which you can use to prevent deadlock between different users on a multi-user system. And any command can be conditionally executed. You can append a Boolean expression to a command word, and if that Boolean expression evaluates false, the command is not executed, and the interpreter goes to the next command. It has a number of string handling functions and operators built into the language. String handling functions allow you to extract pieces of a larger string. They allow you to find a substring in a string. They allow you to get out fields in a larger string delimited by some arbitrary character, and the typical things of getting the length of a string. String operators, the usual concatenation operator is present. There's also a contains operator, which is essentially like it's finding a substring in a string, except it works as an operator. And there's also a follows, which means does string A follow string B in the ASCII collating sequence. Another very powerful facility in the language is a pattern matching facility, much like that in Snowball. The pattern matching facility, coupled with this timing capability on input commands, allows a programmer to fairly effectively eliminate any possible user errors. With a pattern matching facility, you can build filters to be as selective as possible, as you wish, on the incoming input. Input is typed in through a read command as a variable length string. The pattern matching facility then can test that string to see if it conforms to the filter specified. And if not, error messages or appropriate action can be taken. Furthermore, on the read command, you can have a timeout facility, which, for example, would say, request input for the next 30 seconds. If I don't get input for 30 seconds, come back to me and I'll take the appropriate action, whether that be to ring the bell on the teletype or to go on and do something else. There is also timing. The timing capability is also on the open command, so that if you're requesting a physical resource, like a tape drive, let's say, and you can't get it within a minute, you can time out, and again, the programmer can take the appropriate action. Another feature in the language is so-called indirection. This occurs at three levels. There is a indirection command called the execute command, which allows you to execute data as mumps code. In other words, it's essentially a recursive invocation of the mumps interpreter. This allows you to build very easily driver programs, which are can do things like take medical histories and can base their next question on the previous response as data driven from a table question.
Is that similar to the eval statement Snowball?
I think yes. That the top level indirection. You can also indirect at lower levels. You can indirect at the variable name level as well, which allows you to do computed transfers of control, things of that nature, pass arguments from one routine to another in that manner. And you can also indirect at the argument level. Indirection causes some problems in implementation, but it's not too hard to do. Yes, the name level indirection, yes. The language is written in such a way that it essentially, from the programmer's standpoint, it has device-independent I.O. You read and write to any particular command you want. You set up what the physical device you're writing to is with the open command, and you tell in the open command what the parameters are for reading or writing, and then the reads and the writes are the same for any device. As in BASIC, local variables are created and destroyed dynamically. There is the assignment command creates them if they do not already exist, and the kill command explicitly deletes them. And the programmer is in charge of local variable maintenance. The system, once a variable is created, it exists until the programmer explicitly deletes it. Expression evaluation is done by strict left to right precedence. Well, there is no precedence. And you can modify it with parentheses. And data types, all variables are variable length strings. In the standard, there are uniform, unambiguous rules for interpreting a string as an integer, as a non-integer numeric value, floating point, if you will. Or as a Boolean value. So that gives you a brief overview of what the facilities of the language are. The second part of the talk, now that I've told you what mumps is, or I hope I've told you what mumps is how would you go about implementing this? And I hope I've motivated to some extent the desire to implement it. Part of the standard specification is a set of so-called transition diagrams, which are, if you will, state diagrams that explicitly define both the syntax and the semantics of the MUMPS language. The standard first has a prose definition of MUMPS, and then in the middle of the document is a set of these diagrams. Okay, this happens to be a diagram for a local variable. And I can just run through it quickly and give you an idea of how a transition diagram operates. As I mentioned, it's a directed graph. You enter here, there should be an E in there, which I left out. And you traverse this arc of the graph by calling another diagram in this instance. All of the underlying constructs here are calls to another diagram. If that diagram is traversed successfully, then it means that you have found an instance of, in this case, a thing called inName, which is indirection name, and you traverse this arc. If you don't, you have this alternative path. At any point in a diagram, if you reach a place where you have no alternatives, in other words, you've already scanned successfully one arc of a diagram, like let's say you were down here at looking for a closed parenthesis, and you didn't find it, you have this alternative arc, and let's say you didn't find a comma, there are no other alternatives from this point. At that point, you found a syntax error. So this is similar to a flowchart, but it's not really the same because it not only embodies the syntax associated with some arcs is a semantic action. That's what these little red boxes are. And down at the bottom of the diagram are the semantic actions that get executed when, if this arc is successfully traversed, this number one diagram gets executed. I don't want to go into a great deal of detail on this. The MUMP standard explains in greater detail how you scan a diagram. It has an algorithm for scanning the diagram. If you just run through this and ignore the part on indirection, so let's say we reach this point by this route, a name consists of a transition diagram name, which just looks for the appropriate syntactic values that can be in a name. And it can optionally have any number of subscripts. That's what this part of the diagram does. And then the rest of it handles cleaning up indirection. A set of these diagrams constitutes a complete specification of the language, not only the syntax, but the semantics. So if we had a mechanism for encoding these diagrams and executing the associated actions, we would have a MUMPS interpreter. The technique that we have used at UCSF for encoding these is to follow Dennis Allison's suggestion earlier of creating a series of interpreters, actually just two levels of interpreters. You could build a machine, and in fact, there is work underway in doing such a thing, to directly execute these diagrams. In other words, a piece of hardware which would treat this as one state, this as another state, and it would go from here to there if it successfully found this object by doing something. And I don't know enough about hardware to tell you how that would work, but it can be done. Another method, and the method that we're using, is to develop a language, an interpreter, which will allow you to interpret these diagrams into some sort of a meta language, and then build an interpreter which will execute that meta language. Again, that build can be in hardware or software. So what we have done is to, working from the transition diagrams, we've invented a transition diagram language, which I will show you the instructions of here. Now this looks probably much like anybody else's meta language or the IL of Tiny Basic. There's nothing sacred about it. We just developed it and we have used it and found it to be fairly useful. I'll move it up. I'll run through the commands quickly and then move it up so you can see all of them. To handle syntax errors, there's an error instruction which just passes an error number and optionally a character to scan to in the input so that you can flush up to some delimiter if you want, and then a label in the transition diagram language to branch to when you find that character. There are three test instructions. You can test for a single character, like the left paren or the comma in the previous diagram. You can test for a range of characters. For example, in a name, you allow upper or lowercase alphabetics. You could say test range A to Z or small a to small z. Or you can test for a literal, for example, a command name. Like you could test for set to see if you had a set command. To implement the calls in the of one transition diagram to another, there's a call instruction which just saves it return the next instruction as a return address and branches to a label in the transition diagram language. And then corresponding with that, there's a return which not only pops the return off of the stack of this machine that's executing the transition diagram language, it also can return a value so that you will know whether the call was successful or not. The semantic actions in the diagram I just showed you, the little boxes, are in effect links to external subroutines. And that's done with this do command. There are then a number of commands that I'll go over very quickly. There are three bit flag commands for setting, resetting, and testing a particular bit in a bit flag that the TDL uses to set particular conditions or test for them. There's also a set value which is used it's essentially like a case, setting up a case statement. There are two jump instructions, jump equal, jump not equal, which jump if the current value of this set by this is equal to the value in the instruction or not equal to the value instruction. And also there are jump true and jump false, which are used in conjunction with the test instructions for testing for characters or ranges of characters. So briefly, that's what our transition diagram language looks like. It is then possible, using these instructions, to encode the transition diagrams. And I'll just show you what the code looks like without going through it for the local variable diagram that I just had up. If I had room, and I could put the diagram slide up, you could see the correspondence. But if you remember, what I said is that a local variable is a name followed by any number of subscripts, and the subscript loop is essentially here. You then look, if you found a subscript list, you then have to have a right paren. At this point, if you don't find a right parenthesis, you have an error, and you execute the error instruction, which takes the appropriate action. The rest of it handles name indirection, which is not really important. But it's very easy to then, working directly from the MUMPS transition diagrams, to encode them into this transition diagram language. What this diagram, this transition diagram language suggests is essentially an assembly language. And we built an assembler very simply, very quickly, for this language to produce as output 16-bit instructions for a so-called MUMPS machine, which is a concept of an abstract machine which could be implemented in hardware or software. We did it. We just emulated it in software. But there's no reason why it could not be directly, why this TDL instruction set could not be directly implemented in on a micro system. So with the MUMPS machine, then you have a vehicle for executing all of the syntax of the MUMPS language. And as I said, both the transition diagram language encoding and the building of the assembler and the emulator for the MUMPS machine went very quickly, maybe a few weeks. And now that it's designed, it would have, the second time it would go even more quickly. What remains to be done then to finish the MUMPS implementation is to implement these semantic actions, which, as I said, were just the way we have implemented it, they're just external subroutine calls. As external subroutine calls, number one, you've got a nice clean interface between your syntax and your semantics, and most of them are very simple. Action three here, you're just stacking a value on your execution stack as an integer. And most of the actions are very simple. So you, by encoding the language into this transition diagram language format, you have modularized your semantics to the extent that you have split them up into nice little components that need not know what else is going on. They need only do their particular action and return. It also means that you can implement these semantic actions in any language you choose to, whatever seems to be appropriate for that particular action. If assembly code for your microprocessor or whatever is more appropriate, you can use that. If you want to do it in a higher level language, fine. Furthermore, if what we have done is implement almost all of these in Fortran, because we're running on a machine that is really the only high-level language we have available is Fortran. But once you have a quick and dirty implementation done in a high-level language, you can then do timing studies on it and isolate the particular actions that are time critical, go back and very easily rewrite them in assembly code and optimize them to whatever degree you want. It also encourages experimentation with different implementation techniques. We've isolated all of the syntax in one place, and we have fairly effectively isolated the semantics from each other. So that, for example, you can experiment with different methods of implementing the local symbol table. You can have a linear symbol table, you can have a linked list, you can have a hash symbol table. It doesn't affect the syntax at all. And if the MUMPS development community is continuing to enhance the language and suggest extensions in an orderly manner, when extensions are proposed, they're very easy to code up and test in this form, because you don't even really need to go through the intermediary of drawing a diagram for the extension. You can go directly to the transition diagram language. It's that simple. And in fact, we're currently working on this, using this same procedure for implementing another programming language, and we're working directly from the BNF specification for that language, and finding that the TDL approach not only clarifies the BNF, but it allows you to put up a syntax scanner for a new proposed language very quickly. So, in conclusion, I'd just like to reiterate the advantages that we have found to the TDL approach for MUMPS in particular, and as a general tool for implementing an interpretive language. As I mentioned, the syntax analysis is isolated in one place, so that if there are changes or extensions to the syntax, you know where you have to make that change. You don't have to go digging through the code to figure out where it happened. The semantics are fairly simple, well-defined modules with well-defined interfaces and very little interaction amongst each other. As I said, the TDL can be directly implemented in hardware, and I'd like to see that. We've talked to people about it, but it hasn't happened yet. And the TDL approach encourages you to experiment with different implementation techniques, and it also allows you to implement any particular semantic action in the language of your choice. So finally, I guess in conclusion, I'd like to say that I thank you for your endurance this afternoon and encourage you to come up and peruse the mumps documentation that is in front and pick up an order blank or buy a mumps standard pocket guide if you wish. And thank you very much.